like getting married, Nathan.
Careful now.
Exceptionally brilliant for a lot of people, and Mbappe has that quality.
For the best Euro 2020 coverage, subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and download the OTB Sports app.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetSetGo.ie.
The News Round on Off the Ball
with Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Hi there, day four of the Euros well underway now. It's been eventful thus far, hasn't it? Lots to talk about on the football show this evening. Dan McDonald will join us after nine, and more besides, a couple of other guests coming your way. Cora Staunton will give us her take on the weekend's football, which was also pretty interesting. Keith Wood on Monday Night Rugby, the Irish squad named today. And then trainer Jim Bulger has once again said doping is the number one problem in Irish horse racing, and that there's a Lance Armstrong situation coming, talking in the Sunday Independent yesterday. We'll chat about that with the Irish trainer, Ger Lyons, who's based in County Meath. That's this hour. 53106, the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormack here for the News Round. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Joe.
Adrian Parry, hello to you.
Hi, Joe. Richie.
So, man, oh, man, Euros. I mean, even aside from the obvious and the thing that I guess everybody will remember the weekend for, it got off to, I thought, a very bright start. The Italians really good on Friday night, although Nadal Djokovic sort of interrupted my viewing of that. But Italy, very good. Hadn't given the Italians too much thought, even though they had won 26 games in a row before this tournament and are always pretty good at tournament football. And then, of course, there was Eriksen on Saturday, and then, well, we had England yesterday. I thought that, you know, that was kind of going to be the big talking point until Netherlands, Ukraine step on in there. And of course, not to mention maybe goal of the tournament nailed on thus far today at Hampden Park. So it's all going on, Adrian Barry. But of course, the thing we'll all remember in 2, 3, 4, 5 years beyond time will be the Christian Eriksen situation, which was just horrific. And I mean, just did not look good for so long. That's what was kind of so chilling about the whole thing. I was driving home. I was out for the day. There's only so much sport you can watch, and I was kind of rushing home to watch the two GAA semi-finals, and then obviously going to watch the evening game. And a mate rang me and said, "Are you watching this?" And obviously I wasn't. And I quickly flicked off and listened to TalkSport, where David Connolly was on co-commentary, actually. Unbelievably difficult for those guys to try and just talk over this, as it was for everyone broadcasting. But it was so striking on TalkSport after the commentary team handed back that the studio people, they were talking as if Eriksen had died. You know, that was very much, they were like hoping against hope, but like they were really letting you know that they thought that he had passed away. And it was just the most chilling, horrific thing. And then thankfully, I'm sure you saw the photos of him leaving the pitch where he was conscious. And it's interesting, the a Danish doctor, in fairly calm way, as only doctors can when they're exposed to this kind of stuff all the time, was speaking afterwards in the press conference, and he was saying they did lose him, that when they got onto the pitch initially, he did have a heartbeat and he was breathing, but then that all stopped and they got the defibrillator to him, and he said one defib got him back, which is quite quick under the circumstances as these things go. And obviously they had re-established consciousness before he left the pitch, but just unforgettable scene, wasn't it?
Oh, mad. The importance of having those machines around clubs, by the way. Hopefully it drives it home for people, the importance of having those things about at all clubs and beyond, I suppose, in terms of how, where you've got people. It did strike me at the time that he was lucky from the point of view of being kind of central to the play at that time. And, you know, like, so attention was drawn to it straight away. Like, and he is obviously the sort of player that would typically not be far away from play. But if he'd been somewhere that maybe some other area of the pitch where it would have taken another 30 seconds or a minute before attention was drawn to it or attention got to him, like, you shudder to think of the outcome, which we were all considering, as you rightly say, as it all unfolded. And obviously the quick actions, people have paid big tribute, obviously, to Simon Kerr, to the referee, to the paramedics. The whole thing was just, I mean, it's incredible. And it will be spoken about for some time to come. But, Jesus, yeah, definitely. I found it like, you don't know, like, I mean, look, none of us have any right, really, to be that sort of upset by it, I suppose, one way or the other. But I found it sickening. Like, I found it I don't know. I don't know why that was. I don't know. Is it that we just expect these guys to be in the fit of their health, and it's just the last thing that you expect when you're watching a football match? I'm not sure why, but like yourself, when I saw that photograph, I think it was Richie tweeted it, because like it's weird. You go to all event, you go to all available sources of information that you can get for somebody just to tell you everything's going to be okay, and it was that Getty Images picture that came through of him sitting up, and you were just like, just a sense of relief out of it was incredible.
Yeah, I found myself kind of a bit more shook by the thing than usual. But like, I guess we all hear of celebrity deaths all the time. Now, we don't have to watch them obviously unfold before our eyes, which is kind of a key differential. But you kind of go back to eating your cornflakes pretty quickly. You know what I mean? Oh, did so-and-so die? Oh, you know, you kind of... Whereas I'm like, for the kind of hour, you're really wondering and hoping he's okay. Maybe it is just a product of watching it and seeing the upset
it's hitting you. Yeah, it's watching it in real time. Like, we were watching it here at home, and we were both, when the picture came through from Getty of him sitting up and looking like almost like he's relieved at what's gone on beforehand. There was a palpable sense of relief in this house, so much so, I'm not going to lie, you know, there were tears, because you felt like for those 10 minutes that he was being dealt with on the pitch, that you hadn't actually managed to exhale, that you've been holding on to this massive breath, because essentially you're watching one of the best known footballers in the world die in front of you. And, you know, for a couple of minutes, obviously, according to the Danish doctor, that was very much the case. It was just a very uncomfortable watch. I mean, I mentioned it on Saturday that half of what was shown on Saturday shouldn't have been shown. And that's probably another discussion for another day, because it was just from the off, it was very, like, you knew something was seriously awry once the replay wasn't shown. As soon as the replay isn't shown, like, you know, that's code for, it's almost like when a substitution is shown a match of the day, you know that person is going to score. When a replay isn't shown, you know that something serious, very serious, is after happening. But the relief at seeing him okay, you know, and again, like, minutes, like, it felt like you mentioned there, felt like a couple of hours. They're back on the pitch inside 2 hours playing that match, and he was okay-ish, you know, as okay as you can be from coming from a point of death within the space of a quarter of an hour. Felt like much longer, and mostly because you're watching it unfold live, and it's a situation that nobody in any situation wants to watch unfold live in front of them.
I definitely do have a lot of sympathy for the broadcasters. I just think it was a horrific situation for them. Like, the BBC have a policy whereby until the game is actually suspended, they stay with it, and then unfortunately for them, and I guess the rest of us, they're just at the whim of what the director is doing, so they have to take the pictures. They don't have their own cameras there, obviously, where they can say, we'll cut to a wide picture. There is generally a consensus that it went on too long, for sure. But I guess nobody goes into a match thinking they want to show somebody dying. And you can imagine how difficult it is to make those decisions. And do you come back to studio and just let them talk and they don't actually know what's happening? Do you kind of put up some kind of holding picture and leave the commentary talking over effectively a blank screen? I can see how it's just really, really difficult situation. Definitely some of the shots that the director took felt a bit too invasive under the circumstances, you know, showing his partner and seeing his legs. I don't think you needed to see his legs. I think wide picture would have been fine, actually, and stay with the events, stay with the events and a wide picture, and you can see the team gathered around him and leave it at that. But the director's come out and defended himself a bit, and look, I'm sure he's feeling rotten about it. The whole world is criticizing him. He was just saying, look, we didn't do anything, he felt, which was OTT, and they certainly weren't trying to be salacious about it. They were just trying to document what was happening, and they did their best. That was what he was saying. And I think it's not easy. Like, it's just not easy.
Yeah, and it's uncharted territory is a thing in every regard, and it is uncharted territory in every regard. And maybe there are certainly conversations about protocol, you would think, off the back of this. Like,
to interrupt. Like, Streaker comes on the pitch, and it's like, oh my God, we can't show a nipple here. You know, it's like straight away they've got all those protocols. So for something that serious, they should definitely have some protocol going forward. I think wide picture would have been fine. I just think wide picture.
You're probably right, Joe. I think that it's such a, the reason that I'd say that maybe a discussion about protocol now is it's so rare. Like, a Streaker is unfortunately a fairly common thing. So and they obviously, it became a crazy, literally a craze at one point, that they had to bring a policy in about it. Yeah. And this is extremely rare, but obviously at the same time, the impact, the deep impact it obviously has on the players coming back out to play the game, for example, they need to have a conversation about protocol there.
Yeah.
directors' calls. You know, I don't know. Is there like a policy that that UEFA dictates that as long as pictures are available, you as the broadcaster have to take them? I think there might be something in that. But also, I mean, there should be. You got to use your discretion, I guess, as well in that context as a broadcaster. But I do think a conversation about protocol. And I would say, by the way, I would say that Liam Brady was such a voice of reason when all this was going on. I was watching a bit of it on RTE, and he had said afterwards, it was the first time I went, oh, actually, maybe he might be okay, where Liam Brady was kind of saying about the idea that like the players weren't frantic when Christian Eriksen was taken away, and that maybe that was a reason to be optimistic.
Yeah,
it was a really brilliant, mature comment.
Yeah, it's a good point in hindsight. On your point on defibrillators, by the way, so I was reading, if you have a Christian Eriksen situation and there's no defibrillator, then you have a 7% chance of survival. Whereas if a defibrillator is on the patient within 3 minutes, which obviously it was well inside 3 minutes in Eriksen's case, then your chance of survival goes from 7% up to 70, which is just a hell of a jump, isn't it? Time is going to be against us here. Like, I'd love to chat to you boys for 10 minutes about whether or not the game should have been replayed that evening. We'll touch on that before we wrap up. But the news round is the reason we're on here, with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette made of what matters. Rich, you might blitz us through. So the Scots got their campaign underway today.
23 years of waiting, and it ended, started, I guess, as it means to go on. Scotland's Euro 2020 campaign opening with a defeat. Patrick Schick scored twice for the Czech Republic today. The second, a magnificent goal from distance just inside the Scotland half, as the Czech Republic ran out 2-0 winners at Hampden. Next up for the Scots is a date with England at Wembley on Friday night. Kieran Tierney missed today's game with a niggle, but manager Steve Clarke hopes to have him back for that England game.
Obviously, we've done a lot of work with team shape, and Kieran was involved in that, so we've 48 hours to go when he picks up the little niggle that kept him out. It does take a little bit of changing. It changes the dynamic of the team. Kieran's been an integral part of how we've played recently. But I don't think we defended too badly. I think the moments in the game that got away from us, the first one's preventable, the second one's really good.
Thanks.
The rest of the team, the dynamic was okay. I went with Stuart Armstrong to try and give us somebody driving from midfield. The way the game panned out, there wasn't much midfield play in the first half anyway. It was only when the game opened up a little bit that we started to get the opportunity to play through midfield. And then when we did that, I thought we were decent and created some good chances.
Yeah, we're unlucky to go in at the break 1-0 down, and then the Schick second goal, I think everyone's probably seen at this stage, is just wonder. I mean, that won't be beaten, I think, Rich, for goal of the tournament anyway.
Could be. Like, at the rate they're going in, and, yeah, and the way we've seen kind of really good goals so far in the first 4 days of this tournament, there's every chance in some perverse way that that's going to be bettered. And I actually look forward to seeing how it is, because so far it's been a really enjoyable tournament. Hasn't really, it? Really enjoyable.
Yeah, it has. I mean, aside from the obvious horrific 15 minutes, I know you mean, but like, it's been really good stuff. I had no hope for Italy, Turkey. And I found myself going, God, this is bloody good. It's hard to actually leave this match for the greatest clay court tennis match of all time. But ultimately, Andy Murray convinced me. So other games, he had tweeted saying, this is the greatest clay court match. That's my point there. he didn't call me up and say, Joe, Andy here. So
you run in now, Joe.
Indeed. The other games then, what, Slovakia, Poland. We are lads. This should have been us. We should have been there in the media centre watching this game in the Aviva.
Yeah, it should have been at the Aviva. Republic of Ireland's playoff conqueror Slovakia opened with a 2-1 win in Group E. Robert Mack and Milan Skriniar scored either side of a Polish goal from Karol Linetti, and the sending off as well of Grigoris Krakowiak. Still to come in Group E tonight, Spain face Sweden in Seville, kickoff at 8 o'clock. Further to that Eriksen story, Denmark striker Martin Braithwaite says his teammates chose the lesser of two evils on Saturday. They resumed their Euro 2020 game with Finland less than 2 hours after Christian Eriksen suffered cardiac arrest on the pitch. Braithwaite says UEFA told them to continue the game that evening or the following day at noon. The Barcelona striker says there were the only two options presented to them. Denmark goalkeeper Kasper Schmeichel also didn't appreciate the predicament that UEFA forced upon them.
I think the game was played, but I think the question is, obviously, I think a decision about the game should probably not have been made in the heat of the moment. I think it would probably have been a wise decision to maybe change the rules or the regulations in extraordinary circumstances and maybe take a breath and then reconvene the day after and make a decision on how we go forward.
Yeah, it's interesting the way he's talking there, because UEFA certainly were putting it up front and centre. Players made the decision and they did have the choice to come back and play midday the next day, which I know I said it on Twitter, Adrian, and you were kind of saying, well, let's wait and see. I absolutely think they should have not had to make the decision themselves. They're too emotional. They're in shock, some of them, deeply affected by this. And I think there's a certain pressure, like, are you going to answer your country's call here? Are we going to do this for Christian? I think, you know, manager said he left it up to the players. I think generally in groups like that, one or two people make the decision, the rest follow, and it's very hard for anyone to go, oh, look, I want to do it for Christian too, but actually I feel utterly drained and emotional here. I'd like to talk to someone about what we've all just gone through. Of course you're going to say, emotions to one side, let's go out and do it. So they went out and played, and like Simon Schär, who, as you mentioned, Adrian, was fantastic in the moment, was so drained and I suspect overcome by the whole ordeal, he requested to come off, we heard yesterday, and you know, playing centre half, it's not like he's covering 15k in the game either, but just couldn't perform, which isn't surprising. So you kind of wish someone had said, go home, have some food, talk about it, we'll get some counsellors in if needs be, and come back tomorrow or the day after, who knows.
Yeah, I look at it and I was definitely, the bottom line is I don't know, right? Like, yeah. And I didn't know then and I don't really know now, and I was kind of keen to hear what the players had to say specifically, and it is interesting to hear them now that they come out. Like, nobody knew at that time the dynamic of what was going on in the dressing room. Like, was it a very forthright, like, let's say there was a strength of opinion amongst the players that actually, no, we actually really want to get out there now and we want to play the game and we're emboldened or what, mm-hmm. what, like, nobody really knew what was going on. So it was very difficult, I think, to make a call without those facts. And like, I mean, this is not a popular opinion, right? But like, it is difficult to manage on the UEFA side too. Like, none of those people, as I said, I don't think there's protocol there for it. There should be now. It's I wouldn't have a huge degree of UEFA sympathy for UEFA in a lot of different areas, but for the person or people that are on the ground trying to guide through that, it is difficult. Like, do you ask an open-ended question, Joe? Do you say to them, like, when do you want to come back? That's not really appropriate for a tournament. Like, that can't go on. It can't go on like as a never-ending thing.
Sure.
Also, like, the impact of a trauma really like that, I suppose, on the players. Are they going to be okay the next day? Are they going to be okay the day after that? Are they going to be okay by Wednesday? Like, it's a weird, obviously the trauma that comes out of something like that isn't necessarily that linear of a thing, right?
Sure,
like,
sure.
2 days later, you might be in a far worse place. You might not be able to come out at all. Now, maybe your point absolutely stands, and that if that's the case, then they just say, actually, we can't come back out and we don't want to come back out and we're just not in the space for it. My starting point is I don't know, but I was definitely keen to know about what the players and the coaches felt, and they've been pretty clear now that they felt as if they were backed into a corner, and whatever it was, that shouldn't have happened. That's clearly not right.
Like, you're definitely right that midday the next day, there's no guarantees they'd be feeling great about things, but probably would have had a better chance than an hour and 45 minutes after going through that whole thing.
That's true.
But it's difficult, as you said. Maybe there's delayed shock, and I guess the interesting question now is: are they shot for the tournament as a group? Like, where are they today and tomorrow, and with a view to the next game? We were speaking to an Irish journalist who works for Reuters at the game, Philip O'Connor. And he was out around the team hotel in Copenhagen and stuff, and he certainly was sceptical of their ability to bounce back from this. So we'll have to see. On the rugby front, Rich, we have 11 uncapped players in Andy Farrell's squad. This is for the July tests.
Yeah, they're playing against Japan and the United States at the Aviva Stadium next month. Munster pair Gavin Coombs and Finian Witcherly among those 11 new faces, along with Leinster's Harry Byrne, Peter Dooley and Ross Maloney. Connacht's Quaylen Blade, Tom Daly and Paul Boyle have also received call-ups, as have Ulster trio Robert Ballacoon, Tom O'Toole and Nick Timoney. James Ryan out of the Lions, but named captain for this series. Ireland playing Japan on July 3rd and the USA the following week, with both games set to have some supporters present as part of the government's outdoor pilot events. No place for Jonathan Sexton, Keane Healy or Keith Earls in the 37-man squad, and head coach Andy Farrell explained today why the trio are missing.
There's a plan behind it, and the reason for that is, I suppose, it gives opportunities to other lads first and foremost, and these lads understand that, the competitive nature. One, totally agree with that, but at the same time, for them to have proper rest that they need within a pre-season, and on top of that, come back and have a proper pre-season where they can make gains with the body and come back come back into the start of next season with the fire burning rapidly, he's going to benefit us all in the long run. Just to put context to that, for the lads that play through with us, and obviously the Lions lads, that means that they start pre-season a lot later than others. For Johnny, Kian and Keith and a few other lads as well, they'll now probably get 8-9 weeks of a pre-season, which they can certainly make some gains with. Other lads will probably get 4-5. There's a reason behind that logic.
Yeah, we'll talk with Keith Wood after 8 o'clock. It's interesting as well. Andy Farrell was saying Gatland still has an open spot in his coaching ticket. And so obviously July 10th is 2 weeks before the first test in South Africa. So said he would be willing maybe to go out. So we may well see Andy Farrell part of the Lions ticket. We'll talk to Keith Wood after 8 o'clock. Richie, I'm told, is there a breaking news boxing story?
Yeah, this broke in the last hour. An official investigation has been launched into the boxing tournament at the Rio 2016 Olympics. Amateur boxing's governing body, AIBA, says the investigation will be led by Richard McLaren, that name familiar to many. He's the Canadian lawyer who oversaw the investigation into widespread Russian doping. Michael Conlon has tweeted in the past hour to say, medal in the post? The Belfast fighter's bantamweight quarterfinal defeat to the Russian Vladimir Nikitin was the most glaring of questionable decisions made 5 years ago in Rio.
Sorry, is this not about 5 years too late? Was it not obvious
exactly
there was an issue at the time?
It was obvious. I had to go back through this because obviously I did the piece for the OTB Sports app, and like I remembered this was a story before there was actually a punch thrown in Rio. August 1st was when the first story of potential corruption among the judges broke, and it was another week to go before the actual Olympics began. Okay. So we knew this was coming. It came. It happened. We've gone through two AIBA presidents of questionable backgrounds, both of them. And now we are in a situation where they're looking to essentially show that they've reformed fully and atone for previous mistakes. So this is where we are now.
Okay. Well, maybe there's some kind of logic in that. Better late than never. But geez, it is late. Fellas, we are out of time. Adrian Barry, thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
Richie McCormack, thanks a mil. Next up, we are going to talk about Jim Bulger's comments on doping still being very much the number one problem in Irish horse racing. That's on the way.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.